Inspiration in the fact that they are such a band, you know, and when you sit there and listen to their records, you can really hear that, in that it's not like defined parts that there doesn't feel like, you know, it doesn't feel like they're accompanying the singer. It's like a band playing together, and for me that's like, I don't know, that, like the Heartbreakers, I would sort of liken to that, you know. It's like you hear that sound, it's the sound of those five people playing together.
So Gavin Gardner of The Wooden Sky might have been the next Gord Miller. He was attending Ryerson and was a big music guy, started playing music with some of the other students at Ryerson, and they became The Wooden Sky. Actually, they were another name, and then one of their songs was The Wooden Sky. They decided they liked it so much, they stayed with it. He was in studio with us last week. He'll be back as part of the 40th anniversary celebration of The Last Waltz as we pay homage to the band. A reminder, Robbie Robertson will be on this show Friday afternoon at 3:30. Welcome back. It's hour number 4, Melnick in the Afternoon, along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock.
Gord Miller on Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you by Wrangler's Premium Performance Cool Vantage Jeans. Don't sweat the job. Do like Gary Price. Choose Wrangler's Cool Vantage Jeans to be cool and stay cool.
How you doing there, Gord?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
All right. I wanted to ask you something that I wasn't planning to discuss, but today... Uh-oh. Well, no, it's just they're falling like dominoes here. Stamkos...
Yeah.
Taylor Hall's gone for a month. Darren Helm's what, 8 weeks?
Yeah, Johnny Gaudreau,
broken finger.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing anybody can do about it, but it's just a weird day in that regard.
Yeah, it's bad. You know, it's tough for those players, and it's tough for those teams, and you know, and unfortunately with the cap the way it is, it's so hard to replace them. And you know, we've talked about before how tight, you know, the playoff races are, and you can't have a bad month, and it's hard not to without your best players. I think Tampa is in better position without Stamkos than, to be honest, New Jersey is without Hall, or Calgary without Johnny Gaudreau.
Right. They went through that.
They've been through it twice, right?
Yeah.
Really. I mean, the blood clot last year and the broken leg 2 years or 3 years ago. So.
And we just had a discussion. I don't know if you heard Tony Romo yesterday, his speech that he delivered supporting Dak Prescott, and I'm not going to be a distraction and all of that. And Gallo was talking about, you know, it's actually important for the NFL to have the Dallas Cowboys instead of 1-8 or struggling year after year, 8-1. And I'm watching the Leafs do their thing last night, and they're coming in here on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. Do you believe in that? I know you don't necessarily cheer for anybody.
No.
But do you subscribe that it's important, especially after a long, long drought, that a team, an anchor franchise like Toronto, it's important for them to do well?
I would say so, sure. I mean, from the league's perspective, from their television partners' perspective, I mean, people have talked about NFL ratings being down, and you know, they bounced back in a big way last weekend. But when you've got a bad team in Chicago, a bad team in New York and the Jets, you know, a mediocre to poor team in Washington in your major markets, it's hard to have good ratings. And Dallas was a bad team last year, so as a result, don't have a lot of prime time slots this year. Now, I imagine NBC will flex them into the schedule on Sunday nights a couple of times.
Right.
They're allowed to do that, and that will help. But for sure, I mean, ratings are a funny thing. And obviously, ratings drive broadcast deals, and broadcast deals drive revenue. But they're so dependent on big markets. And I remember Dave Dombrowski, we were with him a couple of years ago in Detroit, just talking to him at lunch one day, and he said that baseball would never do the labor deal that hockey did because they're so dependent on network television money. And network television is not, and Major League Baseball is not going to handcuff the Dodgers, the Angels, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Yankees, and the Mets with a salary cap. They're just not going to do it. And so, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive. You take away the big team's ability to spend, well, you're going to get small market teams. You know, everyone's in the same pot. So it's sort of pick your poison.
As a television guy, Gord, I'm curious, so much talk about the NFL and its ratings being down through, at least through the first 9 weeks, especially in primetime, way down. Where you stand when it comes to like a big market versus good product? Like, I understand the Chicago Bears, legacy team, Chicago's a big market. They're boring as heck out on the field.
Right. And so, now, first of all, you know, it's been pointed out that NFL ratings were down in 08 and 2012 as well, during the election cycle. And as I said, the Sunday night game on NBC last week, the Patriots game against Seattle, I think had the highest Sunday night number of the year and one of the highest numbers in the last 4 years. So, you know, I'd be careful turning taking a snapshot and turning into a movie with ratings. So, but yeah, I think that the on-field product's a big part of it. But the biggest driver of television ratings is your major markets being good. There's no question about it. I mean, the fact that the World Series ratings were the best, I think, in something like 9 or 10 years, the Cubs were in it.
Right.
Chicago is the third largest city in America.
Right. I mean, it wasn't just the having not won since 1908 angle. It's also the fact that they're one of America's largest cities.
It's the Cubs. I mean, you know, with all due respect to teams around the NHL, if you put the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Chicago Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup Final, or from a Canadian perspective, Toronto versus Vancouver, the two largest English-speaking markets in the country, you're going to be talking ratings in the 8, 9 million range. It's not a bias thing. It's just they're the two largest English markets in the country.
Now, funny you should mention labor deal, because there are all kinds of reports linking the NHL. We've discussed this before. If the NHL players want to go to the Olympics that badly, then we'll just extend the labor deal.
So it's due to expire in 2022. Either side can opt out by 2020. And that's why there's more than $120 million in bonus money due on July 1st, 2020. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
So the contracts that Louis Erickson, Milan Lucic, all these free agent contracts guys have signed or guys that are re-upping, they're putting lots of signing bonus in the contract. So Erickson, of his $36 million over the course of the deal, $28 million guaranteed. And a huge chunk of that comes due on July 1st, 2020. It's lockout or strike protection. So the players hate escrow. And escrow is the pool that players pay into to make sure that they don't earn more than 50% of total revenue. And it looks like they're going to pay somewhere in the neighborhood of 14% from last year's salaries into the escrow pool to even at 50-50. That's a big chunk of change.
So these storylines are coming out now, Gord, and we know that under Gary Bettman, the NHL has locked out three times. Mm-hmm. As a hockey fan, when should I start getting concerned?
Oh, hold off. Let's wait until 2018 or 2019 to get worried about it. But this is an interesting bargaining chip by the NHL. Let's be honest here. I interviewed Gary Bettman for half an hour at the Primetime Sports Management Conference on Monday in Toronto. He does not like the Olympics on a number of levels. Doesn't like the fact they get no revenue. Doesn't like the fact they interrupt their season, even though they don't lose games. You know, they don't play 70 games in an Olympic year. They still play 82. But they don't like to interrupt their season. They don't like the risk that they take and no reward. And they don't like the fact that the IOC has now said they won't pay for travel and insurance costs. So this is a great way for the NHL to say, okay, well, we don't really want to go, but if you'll give us this, we'll think about it. I mean, the players want escrow greatly reduced in the next contract. To wait till 2025 would mean that virtually every player in the league now would not benefit from that. The biggest issue from the NHL's perspective that they won't talk about is if the World Cup of Hockey is going to grow and stand alone as the best, as the only best-on-best tournament out there, they can't go to the Olympics. As long as the Olympics are out there, NHL participation in the Olympics is out there, the World Cup will always stand in its shadow.
Yes, I'm not going to debate that. I think that's obvious. But do they really want to have a World Cup as often as the Olympics?
Yeah, I think the next one will be in 2020. I also interviewed Don Fehr on Monday, and the one thing that he and Gary Bettman would agree on, I'm not sure how accurate they are, they both thought the World Cup of Hockey was a success. Now, the initial estimates were $90 million in revenue, minus sort of $10 million in operating costs, so it was going to be a 50-50 split of about $40 million each. looks like the actual number is going to be in the $20 million range per side. So, I mean, you probably give this one a C+. You know, there were some empty seats. The ratings were just okay. It kind of fizzled at the end when the North American team, or the European team, sorry, got into the final. But if you want to, if you're dedicated to making this grow, and you're dedicated to making it the premier best-on-best tournament in the world, then you don't want to water it down in any way by going to the Olympics.
No matter what your friend says here, as he did Monday, was this Monday morning with Connor or Tuesday morning on the morning show with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt?
But on the other side, for the product of the winter sport, it's a must. Can you imagine having a hockey tournament without the NHL in Pyeongchang? You know, we are very small. Actually, the winter sports are not as big. So having the best on best in ice hockey, it's a special thing. I would say it's the cherry on the cake to have hockey in the winter games. And there is a value there for sure.
Remy Fassell, and I think we all, you know, I'm old enough to remember when, you know, I used to grind my teeth all the time knowing how good we were as a country. And
right.
We weren't sending our best, and we never even made it to the medal round.
Didn't send anybody, right, in 72 or 76. You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of arguments here, and we've talked about it before. I mean, look, the largest corporations in the world spend billions of dollars to be associated with the Olympic Games. There's value. I mean, you may not be able to put on a line item and say we're making X amount, but there's value to it. I mean, when you're on NBC in the U.S. every single night for 2 weeks, there's benefit to that. But at the same time, they get no revenue. They have no access to the footage. They take an enormous risk with their players, and they have an opportunity to build something else that earns them more money. You know, Fizel announced yesterday that he'd come up with the figure that they need. It's apparently somewhere in the neighborhood of $13 million for insurance and travel costs. But the NHL is saying back, we don't want that money because that's coming out of development for hockey around the world. That money should be earmarked for development. They want the IOC to pay it. The IOC will not pay it. Ultimately, what you have is someone who doesn't really want to go, the NHL, looking for a valid reason not to go.
Mm-hmm. Now, so were you the host of this conference?
Yes.
This conference that is called the Primetime Sports Management Conference?
Yeah, it's Primetime Sports Entertainment puts it on, yeah. So it's Brian Burke and a gentleman named Trevor Whiffen, who is the governor of the London Knights, put it on.
So,
pretty good, actually. It's a lot of law and ethics, and we interviewed Richard McLaren on Tuesday, who wrote the water report on Russian doping.
Oh, yeah. I mean, didn't we have him on? We had him on. When that came out. We had him on.
That story is like a spy and detective story. I mean, it's incredible.
So I was just curious about the name of it. So it's got nothing to do with Bob McCowan?
No. It's Primetime Sports Entertainment.
Yeah, okay. You could have picked a different name, or maybe you're going to force him to pick a different name. Is that it?
No, I don't care. I really don't care.
Well, speaking of your pal Bettman.
It includes a goaltending pioneer in Rogge Vachon.
Come on, Gord. Get it. Straighten this out for Gary. You know,
yeah,
Rogge Vachon. Come on. He's the commissioner of the NHL.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's unfortunate, right?
All right, so let me get to...
Hey, listen.
I just like to poke fun.
Yeah, you know? No, I've mispronounced lots of names over the years, and I'm proud of it. But.
Tom Rennie, this week. Mm-hmm. This is a little disturbing for some of us.
They're about the same. It's a pretty slow start, but that was no different than a couple years ago. There's been an awful lot going on in both markets with respect to ticket sales in general, you know, for events. But it's starting to pick up now. We believe that hockey season has started. The snow flies. People start to become more engaged with what is really and truly a Christmas tradition here in Canada.
So Tom Rennie and Mark Denis and Rene Fassell were in town on Monday to kind of push the World Juniors for obvious reasons, Gordon.
Yeah.
He was talking about ticket sales there. And what they didn't really talk about as much was the fact that they also released information that the Quebec government is providing a grant of $1.5 million to Hockey Canada in order to make this at least a break-even situation. Like that is really troubling.
Yeah, and you know, the ticket sales weren't good in Montreal 2 years ago. It's an odd market. Look, you guys know it.
I want Gallo to repeat word for word what he said the other day here when we were discussing this. Go ahead. Sorry, Gore.
What I said word for word was Montreal is not a hockey city, it's a Canadian city.
I think, in a sense, Toronto can be a hockey city in the right circumstances, but it's largely been a Leaf city. I mean, like Montreal, junior hockey has failed repeatedly in Toronto. The American Hockey League team, the Marlies, do just okay here. The World Junior did well with the gold medal game in the playoff round here 2 years ago. Montreal is interesting because there's a lot of things that work in Montreal that don't work anywhere else, and there's a lot of things that work everywhere else that don't work in Montreal. And it's just the way it is. And you don't want to say that Canada doesn't sell in Montreal, but I remember the World Hockey Championship in Halifax and Quebec City in 08, sold great in Halifax, not well in Quebec City. So it was a reach to begin with, I think, going to Montreal. And I think that the attendance will be better this time with the medal round being there. But in Toronto's case, you've got the World Cup was here in September. The Blue Jays just came off a season-long run. You've got the Grey Cup here in 2 weeks. You've got an outdoor game here on January 1st. And you've got the World Junior. That's a lot.
You also have a lot to do in the – like, when we talked about this, we got some texts from people out west. You know, Edmonton and Calgary, we're NHL cities and we sell out. No offense, but there is quite a bit to do here.
Sure. I think, with the World – I wonder, would the World Cup sell in Montreal at the ticket prices they had in Toronto? I don't think it would.
I don't think so either. No.
I don't know that you can charge $450 a ticket to the World Cup in Montreal.
Final one.
I want to thank my family, my brother Brett, my sister Robin, and especially my mom Bonnie and dad Carl, who are often under the glare of the media. Every kid should be so lucky to have his parents, to have parents who aren't afraid to tell them all of their options. My parents offered me the guidance and direction they thought was best for me and allowed me to make my own decisions. They never wavered, even when those choices may not have been popular. They looked out for all of us, all their kids.
I wonder if Marcel Aubut was listening at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I've known Lindros since he was 16 years old. I think in a lot of ways he rocked the boat, and hockey doesn't like that. He didn't go to Quebec City, but he didn't sign a contract with them. It's not like he walked out in a contract. He refused to play there because he didn't believe in Aubut. And history proved him right twice. Once, with the fact that the Nordiques moved right away. He sold the team right away. And secondly, that Aubut was not a person of high character, as it turned out.
That's right.
Having your parents look out for you? I mean, listen, Walter Gretzky looked out for Wayne, and don't think he didn't ever call the Oilers, a time or two. But for whatever reason, when especially Bonnie Lindros, Colleen Howe, and others speak out, it's a whole different dynamic. And when a woman does it, it's a very different thing. Eric made a lot of decisions in his career that I think he regrets. It didn't end well in Philadelphia. It didn't end well in New York, Toronto. But at the same time, he was a great player. And he asserted his rights, maybe at a time when it wasn't very popular to do so. And on his international career alone, he deserves to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. There's no question in my mind that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And the fact that he was kept out for that long because people on the committee didn't like him reflects poorly on the people on the committee.
Always great talking to you, Gord.
Pleasure to talk to you guys.
Do it again in a week.
Sounds good.
My journey through the hockey world was a roller coaster, and there were times when I was left bitter. Keena has taught me balance. She has taught me how to let go of negative feelings. Since the time I started playing pro hockey until today, my life is as good as it's ever been. I've never been happier. I love you.
Eric Lindros is a Hall of Famer. Does that please you?
Yeah, he deserves it. I think if you, it's an interesting thing. There's no standards to get into our Hall of Fame, but he was MVP in the league, so that should be a pretty big step towards getting into the Hall of Fame, I think. And he had probably a half a dozen years where he was the best player in the game, by far the best. So I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Because a lot of people thought that you were helping to keep him out. Is that fair?
No, that's not fair. Yeah. I would never, ever. I had some battles with him. And, you know, I don't think I was wrong, but I guess I was 50% wrong, and he was 50% wrong, but it doesn't really matter. Going into the Hall of Fame is where I felt that he deserved to be.
Well, he was the biggest kid. He was the biggest kid, the strongest kid, and, you know, who likes the overdog? If you go back to the history of junior hockey in Canada, starting with Bobby Orr, there have been seven great players. And Lindros was the one who got the most attention. It ain't that just like that.
Don't forget, Gord Miller is with us every Wednesday at 6:05 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Jaguar's all-wheel drive technologies provide confidence and control.